Yeah, time for another Graph Science, well, graphphysics.com, video presentation. So overview style video, I think. We'll just see where it goes. I'll start with an idea, a premise, an axiom of, you know, this is how the universe works, and just see how far I can get without some stupid technicality getting in the way or some kind of bullshit. So I should say, I mean, there's, like, all the counter-argument has completely dried up. I mean, they're now singing songs to each other and just telling insane lies that you're just like, what? You know, it's just, it's so bad that there's no way to describe just the level of dupery this is, in terms of so far from the subject and so, like, absolutely no reason to change the subject. I mean, there's no big reveal for my politics or for what I believe in. And I don't believe in killing people or animals or any of that stuff. And it's all this crap is just that crap. And it's... I mean, it's part of the low wattage internet that you have to deal with this nonsense, but it's just disappointing that even some of the trolls who I thought had an ounce of brain apparently don't even have that. I mean, the mindless marble types, they seem to have some clue about reality, but apparently not. These are just playing along with subject changes that just are so desperately silly that nobody reasonable could see any point in this except just overt, trolly, cowardice, cop-out bullshit. So the Brozo is supposed to have made another air track. He says it takes 2 hours to make one. Yet again, we're into, weeks and nothing's happening. So, no point in waiting, no point in even considering it a possibility that they could do an honest experiment anyway. So, the proof will have to come from some other source. So, still working on that. But anyway, alright, so let's just start with a premise, okay, that the universe is made out of two things, force and matter. The matter would be in the form of the most elemental bits would be electrons and protons, but we could just call them the little matter bits because we're not going to worry about certain aspects of their function. We're just going to say this is what they elementally do. And the force is some tiny stuff, a rain, a little particles in the universe, you could say, that go at incredibly fast speed, and it's all the same speed. So there's a huge consistency between these elemental bits, okay? The protons are all the same, the electrons are all the same, and the force is all the same. There's not a... that's probably wrong to say. It's the same in terms of its speed, okay, and its capacity to push, let's just argue. And that's all there is in the universe. This stuff has no innate capacity to move. So an electron, we'll just use that as an example, doesn't have any innate capacity to go anywhere. It has to interact with a force. The force has to be incorporated into it for a moment of time for it to move. So it can get hit by one little piece of rain, okay, and collect a little bit of weight. You could talk about it in terms of its weight. But the idea would be is the drops themselves have the momentum. They stick. So 10 of them could stick in this direction, and there's only one in this direction that hit. So, and every time there's an opposite, okay, that means a reflection. So you would lose this one, and you would lose this one. So, but the idea would be is that an electron's motion is completely dependent on it being in a bias, okay? It has to be in a situation where more little bits of this force hit it from one side than the other side. So if more hits from this side than hits from this side over a period of time, the electron moves in this direction. Now, this brings up the subject of drag, and drag is a real fact for electrons and protons, but it isn't a fact for material composite objects, because the arrangement of the electrons and protons creates a buffer against that. So anyway, the first place we see this, okay, is in the simple gravitational argument. And what we're saying in gravity happens, I think everybody would agree, that the question to be answered is, there appears to be more stuff that goes into the Earth than comes back out. So there's this, you know, 3-to-1 problem, okay? More energy goes in, less energy comes out. That would cause you to get stuck on the Earth because more stuff is hitting you from the outside than it's hitting you from back from the inside. And so the trick is to explain how that's possible because the Earth doesn't get any bigger. So if we accept the axiom, the truth, the fact that there's no evidence that the universe is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and that it's collecting a whole bunch of energy over time, then the conclusion would be is you have to come up with some explanation for how it's possible that more energy goes in than comes out. It has to be at equilibrium with this force stuff. All right? It has every appearance of being at an equilibrium. There's a pressure on the surface point pushing out and a pressure on the outside pushing in, and that equilibrium seems to be a balance. All right? And so, you know, people had a hard time explaining it because there's, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, how do I explain stuff goes in but nothing comes out? I mean, you know, that's black hole weird and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so Einstein's explanation was just to create some sort of idea, okay, that time and space are somehow crinkled and that somehow, you know, the object, a piece of matter is somehow crushing space and pulling it in, you know, from all directions in three dimensions. And the space being pulled in is what's pulling you in. And there was no explanation, of course, as you're crumpling the space. Well, where does the space go? Or what happens to it? Does the Earth take a poo? What does it do with all that space it ate? So it isn't a very satisfactory explanation. So, you know, after like 15 years of thinking about this and doing this shit, it became, I realized that the simple explanation is this stuff is traveling at the speed of light. The stuff reflecting, all right, the stuff that comes back out of the Earth is moving at the speed of light. But the trick is everything in here is moving a lot slower, okay? The little bits of matter, when they're moved by a force, they're actually consuming the momentum of the force in the sense that the force was going the speed of light when it hit the object. But the object's going to move much slower, much less than the speed of light. Tiny percentage of the speed of light, actually. Now, for an electron, I don't know if that's true. Maybe it goes a quarter of the speed of light, or a tenth, or a 100th. It might go pretty fast with just one little bit of force on it. But I'm just saying it's a degrade, is the clear argument. So, as the electrons and protons inside the Earth are being constantly jostled about by the force, every time they move in this direction, for example, like there's more on this side now pushing it, okay, more things have hit it. You know, it's not about them pushing, it's just that more things have hit it from one side than the other, and it actually moves in a direction. Well, what's happening during the time of that motion? Well, during the time of that motion, the force bit is not progressing. So it would have been here, and it only got to here. And that's your differential that creates gravity. Every single time an electron moves this way, it's degrading a force. A force would have been over here, and instead it's only here, still inside the Earth. And then likewise, when it goes this way, every time it moves this way, it's degraded a piece of force, in the sense the force isn't progressing. It's not going the speed of light anymore. It's pushing a piece of matter. And so it is the movement of electrons and protons within a material object, every time they move, they consume the external energy of the universe. There ends up being more energy out here than in here, because in here you're constantly slowing the force down. And that's the differential that creates gravity. Obviously, because of that slowing down, this, the arrow coming out is less intense than the arrows that went in, because this force wasn't slowed down any. It was slowed down going through the Earth, so to speak. And so what comes out is always a little less than, okay, what went in, because every single interaction, every single force counter force action is actually every time an electron goes from one spot. See, if it stays in one spot, it just constantly reflects in all directions. But if it moves, okay, then it has to be consuming some force. There has to be some force that's actually being pushing but not going very fast. And it's all those little increments, all those little tiny, like I said, it goes this way, that's a little tiny piece of energy. It goes this way, that's a little tiny piece of energy sucked out of the force. Where if the thing doesn't move, the reflections are instantaneous. You know, there is no time delay. Everything just bounces off and there's, you know, an equalization of the pressure. But the moving is consuming. So matter essentially consumes energy out of the universe. It's not like mc squared equals mc squared. It's almost kind of an opposite effect, that matter, you know, essentially dampens by moving the energy in the universe. Now, if it stays still, then it would increase the energy in the universe. So if we had a universe and had so many little dots in it, a force, you can sort of imagine that if I stick a piece of matter in there, that means this piece of force has to go back out to the field. Okay, and now the field's more crowded, so that means the field's more energetic. And the idea, though, is if the matter's moving, then I've taken energy out of the field because now there's less velocity, okay, in some pieces of the field. I now have less velocity. So I think you can sort of understand that. You know, that the you know, if it doesn't move, I've consumed a piece of space. You know, it's, let's say all the energy is in a universe, a bit of space, and it's got to interact in that space. You can just understand, if I plop a bunch of matter in there, I'm ejecting the force from that area and saying the force can't be there. All right, it has to go on the outside of the matter. So I've made the outside universe more populous with pieces of force. So I've made it hotter. But as soon as that stuff starts moving, I'm making it colder. Because as soon as it starts moving, that means a piece of force that would have, you know, caused more interactions isn't going to cause them. It's being delayed pushing the matter. It can't get to the drugstore and then, you know, buy some condoms, go here, and then get to home, you know, at the same time, because it's, instead of going the speed of light, it's going 30 miles an hour. And so it only gets to here at a certain time, and it doesn't arrive, you know, time to save the day. All right, so probably could use an erasing. So that's the simplest way to understand. It's about momentum. It's about velocity of matter. So we know that the speed of the force, this is really quantized and very elemental, and that what varies in the universe is how much momentum you can give electrons and protons and atoms and compounds and objects. So when you start collecting the force in those objects, okay, and making them move, that's where you start to vary how much energy is in that particular part of the universe. How much energy is involved in slow moving, which is consuming, or is occupying space and reflecting, which is creates heat, makes the universe hotter. So it's just really about a balance between the two. So you could argue that all of the galaxies and you know, other places where there's matter in the universe, that these are basically just a reflection. You know, their size would be a reflection of how hot the outside world is compared to the inside world. So how much movement, the more movement's going on inside the galaxies, the more they're consumed, the heat of the universe, the less external pressure there would be. And the colder and smaller they get and the less movement, the hotter the external universe would be. And so you could, that perfectly fits with the cosmological data, which indicates that galaxies 10 billion years or 13 billion years ago were like this size, and galaxies today are like this size, kind of indicating they evolve, and that what has really happened is that the universe started off hot, okay, outside, and now it's getting colder on the outside. That's why things are getting bigger, is because there's less pressure on the outside and there's more pressure on the inside. But as that happens, okay, there'll be less pressure to cause motion of the atoms, and the atoms will eventually cool down, and it'll go back to this. So it's the universe is just oscillating between these two states of hot on the outside, you know, cold on the inside, and hot on the inside, this one, and cold on the outside. So it does make a lot of sense that instead of a big bang, it's really like the universe is just oscillating between hot and cold. And that would explain a lot, because it basically says that the gravitational constant, okay, something, you know, it's called a constant. Yeah, it's constant for the next 100 years, the next 1,000 years, but over millions and billions of years, that constant changes a little bit. Which, you know, is not violating some sacred law to suggest, and it does fit a lot of the data points. You know, it's the phrase they use, data points. Alright, so I shall be back. Alright, so now for a slightly more complex subject, so we'll try to explain something about electricity and EMF and the radiation that comes off of objects when you put electricity through them. And so the idea is that you have this force moving the speed of light that hits electrons and moves them. And the idea is that it's going to go through the wire. And it's going to go through the wire very fast, so we know whatever the system is, the movement is kind of straightforward, almost as if the force starts at one end of the wire and just shoots through the wire. Now, it doesn't, okay? It's something less than exactly the speed of light. And the less than is the little bit of action that happens on the surface of the wire. So what you're basically arguing is that you're going to send in electrons, okay, that are, again, it's matter moving, okay, that's little bits of matter, and you've given it a velocity, and it's in a field of other matter. So you could understand that the matter, if the theory would be, is that there's the forces between the two objects of matter, two electrons that exist in the universe. They're repelling each other because there's force. Any force between them will reflect. And so anytime one moves forward, it's going to reflect more energy in that direction. Okay, I move my hand forward, I reflect more energy at you. Okay, it's just a fact, more energy hits you. Because I'm reflecting it. Yeah. So that's what their repulsion is essentially made out of, is the fact that if they do move towards another electron, it gets hit with more pressure and it moves away. So they're always constantly connected. So you're basically just saying, I'm going to push into one electron, that's going to push into the next electron, that's going to push into the next electron. And the pushing force is stuff moving the speed of light between the objects. So they don't have to move much for there to be a lot of force being, pressure being conveyed between them. They don't have to move very far to increase the pressure. All right. And so you're basically just saying, how much pressure am I applying? A high voltage would be you're moving the electron a larger amount of distance, you know, so that would be a low voltage. A high voltage is you move the electron this much distance, you know, and a higher voltage would be you moved it this much distance. And how much distance you move it in a period of time, its velocity, will essentially be saying, you know, how much pressure you're creating between the electrons. So if I move this much, you know, I only make so much brightness on you. If I go this far, you know, I make more. I push on you harder. All right, so that's the mechanism that gets the electricity through. So the electrons in real space are really tiny. The distance between them is very large. So you can understand that it's mostly about what happens in this space, not this little tiny movement. So this little tiny movement of the electrons is a tiny percentage of the amount of total space that is created between the two objects. So you could argue that the force going the speed of light is most of what's happening, and it's only a tiny percentage of the interaction, a tiny percentage of the pressure exchange will take place during the little tiny motion of the electron. So it's only subtracting a tiny bit of the energy moving the electron. So that's why it's close to the speed of light. So the key is that the electricity just, clearly the electron pressure just moves through the wire and tries to get to the other side. And that's all it's really doing. And as there's still a number of electrons, and you're just really saying how fast are they moving. So they're moving a certain speed to begin with, and by the time they get to the end, they're not moving any speed at all. Again, they're just going back into the source, the battery. You have to have a place, you have to have a reason for them to travel, so you have to complete a cycle, because they're basically, you're pushing the electrons. You have to constantly push them, and so you always constantly have to have a low pressure to push into. You know, having the high pressure won't do you any good if there's a high pressure on the other side. There has to be a low pressure, an absence of pressure on the other side for it to continue to move in that direction. I mean, that's sort of obvious, right? So the key point to make that, you know, I never realized, and I would argue most of you have never realized, is that when electricity is going through a wire, it's not pushing any energy out. None of the energy in the wire is going out into the world, in the sense that none of this force that's pushing, okay, is going out of the wire. It's not creating a field out of the energy that's moving through the wire. It's creating the field by the very process of pushing the electron. So it has to keep pushing them to get through. And as it's pushing them, that's the same thing as moving them, which is heat, in the sense of it's consuming heat. So something that's consuming heat looks hot to us. Right? So that would be a key point to recognize, is that when something looks hot, it's because it's moving a lot, and moving a lot is absorbing energy. So it's consuming energy to move. So the energy is being used to move the electrons, and the side effect of that movement is that you're changing this surface. So this is where, like, the idea of wave comes in, because as you're moving the electricity through the wire, you're essentially pushing electrons in and pushing electrons out, pushing electrons out and pushing electrons in. And that's what's creating a pattern of reflection. So as I've made the point, you know, if I move my hand away from you, if I could possibly move it at the speed of light, my hand becomes invisible. So if I could move my hand away from you at the speed of light, you get no reflections of light off my hand, and you see nothing. Even going half the speed of light, you're not going to see much, because I've so degraded the frequency of the light by moving really fast. I've redshifted it. Okay. And the opposite happens is going forward, is that I'm collecting a whole bunch of photons that you can't see because I'm moving so fast, they're all getting caught up. I'm collecting them as I move my hand. So as an electron moves really fast, it collects a bunch of energy because it can't reflect it. It's going almost as fast as the electron. So you can understand when it bounces off it, it's barely going any faster. So it's staying really close to the object. So if an electron moving really fast is collecting a lot of force. The whole time it's traveling, it's collecting that force. Now you need a whole lot of force pushing behind it, okay, for it to be going that fast. And, you know, there is a degrade. Obviously there's no, you know, cosmic rays are short duration events. And this would be sort of the example of something like that. Some matter moving very fast, that's going to create a very high pressure. Okay, so a lot of energy will show up at the target. So if I move my hand really fast, the speed of light, you would be hit with a punch of energy that represents all the energy in the distance between my hand and you. All of that energy, all of that force would show up, arrive all at once. All right, so that's essentially what's happening here, is there's a pattern created. So you could just see this is on and off and on and off and on and off. And that pattern, okay, of stuff moving out and stuff moving in. So there's a place where there's no reflections from the, you know, from the surface, and places where there's extra reflections. So you essentially have this pattern being created every time electricity is going through a wire. And you could argue, okay, that you put more voltage in or higher voltage, that you'll get a more distinct or a different pattern. And if I change the atoms here, you know, if I change the compound I'm using, I can change the frequency of that pattern because the electrons will be spaced differently, right? So if they're just charge electrons, you know, surface electrons, then there'll be a high consistency. But once you start heating the material, see, I mean, if you just have it at normal temperatures, it just creates a certain, you know, the frequency will be more standard. But the higher the temperature of the substance, the more you're changing the molecular structure of the atoms. You're making them more elemental. Okay, you're breaking down the compounds. And by breaking down the compounds, you're creating smaller, different sized atoms. And the different sized atoms have different pressures between their electrons, different distances. And so now you're going to create a different frequency. So that's how you get the colors of light, is by changing essentially the frequency by changing the heat. So the temperature changes colors. All right, so that's another pretty standard rule. So the idea is that anytime you have an inductor, okay, a coil of wire, I guess I should draw it this way, or some other light receiving device, or energy photon receiving device, all you're really doing is picking up the consequential pattern being created in the material that you're putting electricity through. So you have if you have a frequency coming in, you know, on and off where you're pumping it, then obviously you're going to be pumping this signal on and off. This pattern will turn on, the pattern will turn off, the pattern will turn on, the pattern will turn off. And that frequency goes out into the universe, and that's what stimulates the coil of wire. The coil of wire sees the pattern and duplicates it. So if there was, you know, I have a bunch of electrons in a pattern on one side. I can't see that. I have electrons in a pattern over here. I should do this thing, right? This is a little hard to see. This color isn't perfect. And then you're just basically collecting over here. So the idea is if this electron moves, then this electron moves this way. And if this electron moves back this way, then this electron moves this way. And if this electron moves forward, this electron, you know. So you're duplicating the pattern. And by duplicating the pattern, you've essentially recreated the electrical pressure. You are recreating the exact pressure that this is a symptom of. So this is the symptom of pressure, you know, electrons popping in and out. And the symptom is transferred, and by transferring the symptom, you've transferred the disease of the motion, the what it looks like. You know, waves can look like motion when they're just going up and down, right? So you've just created the up and down, but the up and down appears to be motion. And so you've recreated the electricity by recreating the pattern on another object. But the energy was just used doing this, creating the pattern. The energy, this is all reflected energy. So you've taken something that has no pattern, you know, a bunch of energy from the universe, the gravity, the little bits of momentum are coming in and hitting. And you're basically saying, I'm going to create a surface, okay, that's irregular. So I'm going to get irregular reflections, places where the reflections are going to be more intense and places where the reflections won't be. Because of that movement. And so you're not using this energy, isn't going out and hitting the inductor. All you're doing is creating a pattern on the surface. The surface is reflecting the pattern and it's recausing it on another object. So it's essentially, you know, you could just argue that you're going from an atom could be this size and then you make the atom this size. You could understand that if atoms could grow and shrink, that they would essentially be creating more and then less energy in the universe. When they're retracting, the universe sees nothing. When they're expanding, the universe sees more. So you're just creating fluctuations in the amount of this little stuff that's coming in from all directions all the time, hitting things. and such. That's adequate. So I'll see if there's a part three that's necessary. I can't get into magnetism and charge without explaining that, you know, there really are two forces to match the two kinds of matter. So you have a plus and minus matter, you have plus and minus force, and the two behave inversely to each other, which creates magnetism and charge. But I don't know if I want to get into that. Well, I'll think about it. All right, so I guess we'll just end with the kinetic energy connection. The fact that it's just momentum, and that's all there can be or ever will be, and that's all there's really evidence of, and all of that crap. So basically I'm arguing that there's just matter's just made out of a number of these elemental bits. So the mass of something is just adding up how many electrons and protons something has. That's it. And momentum is just the idea that all of them have to be moving, okay? For the whole object to move, all of the little bits, you would argue, inside have to essentially be moving with a bias. And they're all being pushed in their direction. And to be pushed, as I'm arguing, they have to have acquired a previous condition that puts them in the mood to push. Okay, so they had to acquire a previous condition where more stuff was coming this way than was going this way, and they acquired this extra amount in the required direction. So the force or the energy would just be measured by measuring how many of these are there. So you're just really saying, like, yeah, okay, well, if I figure out the velocity of the whole object, I know, okay, that no matter what's going on in here, there's a bias in this direction. This is its velocity. And the force that's relevant, the force that means something, is the extra force in this direction that's moving stuff. And so I can just calculate how much energy there would be to move an electron that collective speed. And so it's just the mass times the velocity of the object, and essentially that'll tell me, well, how many little bits of energy is it? How many units of energy did it require? So if I only have three little pieces of electron, then I only require, you know, whatever, 16 force bits. And if I have four, then it's going to require 20. And if I, you know, I can just, well, be the, I should use 15. Okay. And if it's 4, then it would be 20, and then it would be 25, and I can just add them up. How many force bits would it take to increase the velocity of the whole object? Well, for this to go faster, it needs one more, and this one needs one more, and I can only add them collectively to the whole object. I can't add just one and change anything, so it always has to be in units that are consistent with how many, the objects you have. But that's all there is. There's no room for any mv squared, 1/2 mv squared. There's no reason to say there's a squared velocity amount of energy, that you take the velocity and square it. There's no reason to square it. You're just counting the number of units of mass and how fast are they going, and that tells you exactly how fast they're going is this line. And all you're saying is how long is that line for each piece of mass, and how many pieces of mass are there. There, you're done. You've calculate how much bias it has in a direction by just adding this plus this plus this plus this plus this, and you're saying it's a line this long, and that's how much momentum it has. So if there's a lot of matter bits, I only need a small little lines to make a big line. If there's very few matter bits, then I need very long, okay, high velocities to add up to a long line. So it's just about how much this adds up. I mean, and that's all there's room for. And this is just made up nonsense. So anyway, I've made so many videos explaining the bad history and the fact that there is no evidence and everything points to momentum being the thing that's conserved. Momentum is the thing that works. And momentum passes all the tests. It doesn't fail any test. Any experiment you can show, you can calculate the right answer as being through momentum. And it'll conserve and it'll do all the right things. Now you can create fake experiments, you know, and say, hey, look, I made free momentum. But I would argue that if you did, and you could actually replicate that experiment, I could capitalize on it and take the extra energy and use it and create a perpetual motion machine, and more precisely, a free energy machine. So, yes, I have good reason to suspect that some people do experiments just for the demonstration purposes, and they weren't very clinical in the information they showed you. It's not exactly the truth. Okay. But anyway, and there's really, like I said, theoretically, there's no room for it. So, you can stay stupid, or you can realize that science made a lot of too aggressive and too hard a conclusion too early. Just like the religious kooks. You know, they didn't wait long enough to say, oh, wait a minute, there's this evolution thing, we have genetics, our genetics completely control what happens. Look, we're mutating vegetables and turning them into other kinds of vegetables. So clearly, this God creating it thing is kind of nonsense. So if they would have waited a little while for a little bit of the evidence to come in, okay, you know, they figure out that, hey, the apples people were eating 500 years ago sucked, and the apples we're eating now are really great. Did God do it? No. No, we did it. You know, even with the sheep and all this stuff, oh, we're making sheep to produce more wool and, you know, better milk and all this other crap. I don't know if they ate sheep milk. I don't know. Drank. Whatever. Well, they probably made cheese out of it or something. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. The point is there was evidence and they just didn't see it because they had already drawn a conclusion. So it wasn't a natural progression where the facts show up and people go with the facts, because they already established a bunch of ideas and they don't want to change those ideas. And they don't want to admit they were wrong for 100 years or 200 years. They don't want to explain to their kids, oh yeah, I told you stories are all bullshit. And they don't want to admit their fallibility, that they were duped by, you know, that they made too aggressive a conclusion. They don't want to admit any failure here, and there was huge failures. I mean, the very fact that they added the one half, you know, 100 years after they had established it as a truth, and then they changed it by one half. I mean, a huge, gigantic change. I mean, come on. I really shouldn't, you know, reasonable people should be able to accept that, yeah, maybe they just got it, a lot of it wrong. And the fact is this is the Occam razor simple solution. This is the simple answer to how the universe works. This works, and it's simple. That means it's probably the right answer. And so your resistance to change is just kind of belligerent and frankly makes you all look ridiculous. But by all, it really means the, you know, because it's the low watt internet, it's full of psychos and kooks. And so, you know, the percentages are so uneven in terms of the number of rational people versus irrational ones, that, you know, it looks like you're all pathetically retarded. The whole human race is pathetically retarded and can't even try to do something reasonable and logical. But it's only because only too small a number of human beings are involved in the conversation, and most of the ones that are involved are the dregs of the internet, the little bottom-feeding, you know, clams and, you know, crabs and, you know, the shit-eaters, the shit-poo-makers, you know, the slugs, the slimy, shitty crap is the only part of the internet I have risen into. I haven't gotten to the clear water yet. You know. So anyway, till the next time and such. But yes, you're all embarrassing yourselves, frankly. All you trolls, you're just going to be, you're not going to win. And you're going to look like really evil, obnoxious assholes. So if that's what you want written on your tombstone, keep being assholes. You know, keep lying about what I've said, keep lying about who I am, you know, keep pretending that your lies are somehow going to win the day. Well, they're not. And you're just going to be exactly what I just called you, liars. You're just going to, they're just going to, you know, the tombstone's just going to say, fucking cunt liar. You know, too bad he didn't have a happy accident in his youth. He was a piece of stupid, shit-talking scum. A dishonest, crappy, shitty human. Ugh. So, live with that, fuckers. And such. So, this has been a draftphysics.com video presentation. Debatephysics.com also, but I can't say there's a... there's just nobody presenting any counter theory or logic. No one. No one. They're incapable of doing it. All they're capable is writing slander. Even musically. Pathetic. Well, it's not really music, is it? Yeah, I don't know. It's a pattern, but I don't think it's music. Lumpy shit. And such. And so forth and whatnot.